call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Thank you all for being here. We are going to start by opening a very short work session for the purpose of bill introduction. Dr. Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have there in your packet LC 3365, which is for introduction. Remind the committee that our introduction deadline is Monday. So that'll be next Monday, March 2nd. So we'll have another posted for work session on that day for bills that will be coming in. This concept, at the direction of the chair, we did request this based on recommendations that were made by the Department of Revenue in their tax compliance report. Largely what it does is give them some additional authority for disclosure of information with other state agencies. And their recommendation is that this will help them with their tax compliance procedures. The bill also has a relatively broad relating clause to personal income tax compliance, so there's some other issues that may come up as well in this context.
Thank you, Paul. And I think this is going to be one of the bills that we spend a good deal of time in committee working over to see if we can improve the tax compliance situation in Oregon, and also work with our friends possibly on the Ways and Means Committee to try to improve that area. Again, with the proviso that introduction of a bill does not mean support or opposition, Senator Telfer, do you have a motion?
I'm sorry, I was not paying attention.
This is a test. Senator Telfer, the bill we have is LC 3365.
I would move that LC 3365 be moved to
introduced as a committee bill. Thank you. Senator Telfer has moved that LC 3365 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Okay, now we will move on to the main event today, which is to open a change counsel first here and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 440. Mazin.
Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 440 what attempts to do, as you have in your I put some background in your SMS on how and when this lodging tax, the hotel motel tax, kind of came into existence. And when it did, as a state portion of it, the 1%, it did a preemption and made conditions for any new tax that would be done on the local level. And that condition is to have whichever revenues that come out of any additional tax on rooms or lodging tax would have 70% of these revenues expended on promoting tourism. And that has been the case since the compromise that happened at the time when the tax started. Now, that's the 2003 session. This bill attempts to take that requirement and relax it for the local government. This is an enabling legislation. It will allow local government to have that type of tax without that requirement needing to be fulfilled, the 70% of the expenditures being on the promotion of tourism. However, it also puts the timeline of the 2009 or from the implementation date on, which means that the amounts or taxes that were done before, we will still be under that requirement before 2009. After 2009, that requirement will no longer be the case.
Okay, thank you. What we're going to do today is we're going to start off with two panels of proponents of this legislation to whom I've allocated up to a half hour, but you get a prize if you do it sooner. prize to be announced later. And then we'll move to a half hour that I've given to the opponents. And then after that, if other people sign up, we will alternate between pro and con. And because of the order, if there's a need for any kind of rebuttal or a desire on either side, we'll provide that opportunity as well. So today we will start out with Gil Riedel and Don Lindley and Commissioner Mary Labhart, it looks like. What?
Mark
Labhart. Oh, yeah, I could have. Yeah, I should have figured that out when I saw you walking up here. Thank you.
Madam Chair, please. I'm not trying to mimic the Godfather, honestly. I'll do my best here to be understood.
Well, we'll make you an offer you can't refuse, so welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gil Riedel, Association of Oregon Counties. With me is Commissioner Don Lindley from Lincoln County, who's a past AOC president, and Commissioner Mark Labhart from Tillamook County. I will make a basic statement, and then we let the two commissioners talk about what's going on and their circumstances. AOC supports Senate Bill 440. At the outset, however, we want to say that we support the 1% statewide tax that was imposed in 2003, transit lodging. This is because tourism is an important component of a diversified economy, and it's recognized and supported by county governments. All 14 county transit lodging taxes that were in place immediately before the 2003 law had at least a portion of the proceeds shared with economic development and tourism. That same law, however, as you heard, imposed a preemption on local governments' control of their own transit lodging taxes. Until 2003, this had always been a local revenue source, managed by locally elected officials and shaped to local circumstances. As the chair knows, being a member of the task force, in its finding, the Task Force on Comprehensive Revenue Restructuring found that many governmental services are jointly provided by state and county governments. This means that fiscal stress at one level of government affects the other, and that's illustrated by our ubiquitous colored table of shared state-county services that I've attached to the testimony. There is clearly fiscal stress at both levels of government. The stress at county level is illustrated by the next two attachments, first being the four-year ramp down on the federal forest payments legislation, federal legislation that will expire fiscal year 2010-2012, leaving 25 hard-hit and critical counties. The final attachment is largely because of Measure 50 and exacerbated by preemptions such as this one, a structural gap in county revenues and expenditures for public services exists now and will grow to approximately $2 billion in the year 2019-2020. That's this yawning gap here, you see. The task force recommended that the Legislative Assembly reduce restrictions on local government's ability to raise revenues, and we agree with that. The other major task force in the interim was the Governor's Task Force on Federal Forest Payments and County Services, and you reviewed that a couple weeks ago. That task force studied the predicament of counties and, as a consequence, the state and the predicament we find ourselves in. The task force noted a threat to the functioning of 24 hard-hit and critical counties, and among its 53 recommendations was number 3, which read, amend state law to give counties the authority to use existing revenues more flexibly and to enact new revenue options with approval of county voters. It specifically mentions the transit lodging tax under this recommendation. Now, recall that of the 27 general law counties and 9 charter counties that don't state otherwise in their charter, all revenue-raising measures must be referred to the voters. So, as a consequence, any new transit lodging taxes will be determined by the voters on as to whether to impose the tax, how the proceeds will be used, and will hold locally elected officials accountable for its management. Tourism causes increased demand for county services, including public service, corrections, health and emergency services, solid waste search and rescue, and road wear and tear. A county often ends up as the primary health care provider for frontline industry workers in the tourism industry. The state is not in position to appropriately address the variety of local needs and conditions that each county faces. Nevertheless, in 2003, the legislature, in effect acting as a super local governing body, directed newly enacted local transit lodging taxes to specific purposes for the benefit of a particular industry. It is time to permit counties to help themselves, to trust local voters and local governance, and to pass this bill.
Thank you. We'll move on, and then we'll go to questions. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Don Lindley. I'm a county commissioner from Lincoln County, as Mr. Riddell indicated. And it was interesting, over the lunch hour, Commissioner Laphart and I were talking about the series of strategies that we're using to cut personnel, cut services, reduce costs at the county level, and certainly the state is going through those same kinds of discussions. What this bill does is it actually gives back one of the few tools that we have to look at some additional revenue. That was, again, as the gentleman indicated, preempted in 2003. First of all, I need to tell you that tourism in our county is extremely important, and I'm probably the biggest fan for the industry in our county, and in fact served as the past president of the Newport Chamber of Commerce. It's important in that I think we have one of the largest per capita expenditures by our tourists of any county in the state. So it is a $500+ million industry that is, again, very, very important to our county. We as a county, though, in years past have specifically gone to the voters, as Mr. Riddell indicated. That's something we have to do. We can't simply have a meeting one day and increase the rate. Gone to the voters with specific expenditures for tourism and economic development and have passed those. But that was a local decision. That was a local decision based on our priorities. If we were in the situation today that we are in, back then, that may have been a different. There may have been a different outcome for how we used those funds. And I'm here just to say that this should be a local decision. It does go to our voters, and the local citizens should determine just how they want this tax spent. I want to also say that there are costs. There are certainly benefits to the tourism industry, but there are costs. For example, in law enforcement, I just got these numbers from our sheriff's office this morning. Last year, we had 594 DUII arrests in our county. Out of that 594, 261, or 44%, were people who don't live in our county. So there's an impact on our sheriff's office, there's an impact on our jail, there's an impact on our district attorney's office, and on down the line. I also wanted to let you know that we have a health clinic, or actually health clinics in our county, that is a federally qualified health clinic. And last year, out of our 44,500 citizens, we had 5,300 individuals that took advantage of our health clinic program. Half of those had no resources or medical coverage and were provided that care they received free. Many of the folks who take advantage of the health clinics that we offer work in the service industry. And these are folks who clean hotels, are waiter or waitresses, maybe work part-time in some of the shops that we have, and so on. So there is definitely a cost. And the list kind of goes on, other transportation costs. We provide a transit program. Certainly, it's a benefit for many of the folks who work in the service industries. But that's all; those are all costs that we now bear during a time when our resources are limited. And there are, in fact, a lot of other priorities that we need to address. I think that with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Labhart, and I'm a Tillamook County Commissioner. Before I actually start, I would also like to say I was president of the Tillamook Chamber of Commerce for a number of years, and also support tourism. And as you all know, Tillamook Cheese, hopefully you know this, is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. It's in, I think, number three in tops of the tourist industry in the state of Oregon, so tourism is a huge deal to our county also. I was thinking about my testimony, and I'm not going to read it, I'm just going to talk about it. You know, this is going to be a really tough decision for you, because you're looking at potentially changing something that you approved under a compromise a number of years ago in 2003. So you're going to hear some strong feelings on both sides about this. I would like to argue a point of view that you may not hear today. There is, and you were briefed on this, this is the governor's task force report on federal force payments, and I was privileged to be chosen by the governor to be one of the county commissioners, one of the four county commissioners that was on this task force. And we worked for many months on developing a list of recommendations for what we believe is a very serious situation that's facing counties with the lack of federal force payments, particularly on a ramp down for the next 4 years and going away in 4 years. So we're not looking at short-term. We're trying to look at long-term about the viability of counties and the viability of counties to stay solvent. And number three recommendation, as Gil said, talks about this issue. And I'd like to just briefly read you the letter that was sent out by Tim Nesbitt, who is the governor's one of the governor's staff people, and Bobby Green, who was the other co-chair of this. I'm just going to briefly read you a portion of the letter. Now the challenge is to move forward with solutions to preserve local services and state and county partnerships which support them. This is the greatest contribution of our task force. You developed a list of thoughtful and useful recommendations by which all levels of government, county, state, federal, and city, can respond to the challenges faced by our federal forest counties in a hard-won phase-out period that's ahead of us. And again, this recommendation was number three of 53 recommendations that we submitted to the governor for his consideration, and that's part of the reason that you see this bill. We do support the counties, as Gil said, we do support the continuation of the 1% transient room tax. But what we need is the flexibility, and prior to 2003, we had that flexibility. In our county's case, we would use that flexibility to fund things like tourism promotion and advertising. We would likely use it to fund our county fair, and fairs are having a really tough time right now, so we would use it to fund our county fair. And we would also use it to fund our county road system. And I'm embarrassed to say this, we have the worst county roads in the state of Oregon. The Association of Oregon Counties had an independent contractor do a survey of county roads, and of the 36 counties, Tillamook County has the worst county roads in the state of Oregon. Those are the roads that are access roads for tourists to access the state highways. Those are roads that we use to move our products to market. ODOT will tell you that they have what they call a pavement condition index. It should be in the mid-80s for the pavement condition index. Ours is 44. So we're half of what we should be in terms of a well-maintained road system. So we would use the flexibility, if you give us that, to be able to fix some of our county road system. And so we are asking that
in this tough time of trying to figure out where we're going to fund things, and of course we're doing the same thing that you're doing in terms of state budgets, we're having huge issues. Our county road system, we have a bridge, a major arterial bridge right now. It's about an $8 million bridge that has moved 3 inches off of its foundation. It's a 150-foot bridge that goes over the Nehalem River. $8 million, that's double our entire road budget. So we're trying to figure out, are we going to close the bridge? Are we going to close the access? Where are we going to find the dollars? So it's a huge issue for us. So you're going to hear testimony today that's going to talk about we need these dollars to stay at the 70% level to maintain tourism promotion. You have two county commissioners here that care a lot about tourism promotion and advertising and would continue to do that. But there may be some opportunities where other counties say that is not the highest priority for us, and we may like to have the dollars where they were before, prior to 2003, to put into high-priority projects. And that's what we're asking for, is to give us the flexibility to use those dollars where we see it as important. Don and I would use it for tourism promotion and advertising partly, but we'd also use it to fund other things, like county fairs, like our road system, like vital county services that may be cut. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Have you given any thought to, since you already, and this is primarily for the two commissioners who both mentioned it in your testimony, have you given any thought to maybe a percentage approach that might make more sense? In other words, if it wasn't 70%, have you given any thought to maybe a lower percentage that you could live with?
I'll give you my personal opinion. We believe the bill ought to pass as is, but I'm personally, you know, if there's flexibility built into that, if it's a lower percentage, you've done some more flexibility, 50-50 or whatever it is, you've allowed for some more flexibility for us. Right now, 30% of the money can only be used for other vital county services, and so it would be a lot better for us if we had more flexibility. What that percentage is yet to be determined. But in answer to your question, yeah, I would personally say if we could work out some kind of a compromise, which what it was in 2003, it was a compromise to get to the 70%, as I understand. And so maybe we can work something else out.
Madam Chair, I would say that prior to 2003, that the decision about whatever the money was spent on was a local decision. And in county's case, that decision was made by the voters. I think the old saying is, once you've seen one county, you've seen one county. That basically every county is going to have a different situation. They're going to have different priorities. They're going to have different needs. We believe that it should be up to the local county authorities to present whatever is best for their particular county to the voters and let the voters decide.
Thank you. You want to add that?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I think that it would be prudent for us to be open to that, and I could check with other commissioners and see what would be tolerable.
It was just a question at this point. Other questions from the committee? Senator Rosenbaum.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And this is, I think, Gil, a question for you, or maybe it's for Mazen. But so my reading of this bill is it would only apply to new taxes that were imposed after the effective date of the bill.
That's right.
And so I assume most of the taxes that are currently in effect would still be in effect and allocated under the formula before this, if this bill were to pass. So do you know, are there, I guess really this is a question for staff, of the current taxes, are a lot of those sunsetting and needing to be renewed? How would this affect the existing revenues that are being allocated under the current formula?
Senator Rosenbaum, I don't think from the time this law was adopted until now, there were many new taxes. I'll check which ones have, but although they were popular at one time, I think after this law kind of put a dampen on them.
Looks like we might have some from the panel.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum, it would not have any effect on the existing taxes that we collect or the purposes that we collect them for. They don't sunset. They're in existence now, and this bill would not change whatever formula we would currently have in the county, unless we increased the tax, and then that'd be a whole different decision.
I think part of the question was how often have you used this mechanism since 2003 to raise taxes locally with the 70-30 split?
In our county, once. And I don't know across the state how many other counties have done any increases at all. But, you know, we also want to be competitive. And in our county, I think there's a ceiling of how much of this tax you can really charge, and in order to be competitive with other lodging facilities around the state. So we're not likely to jack it way up past what the Multnomah County might be, or Portland might be charging. We're going to be in the neighborhood of where our cities are.
Okay, and Gil, maybe you could find out that information of how many counties have used this and provide it to the committee.
I'm sure I can tell you that leading up to 2003, we had 14 counties. They were permanent ordinances. Don has mentioned Lincoln County. I have not heard of any others, but I'll explore that.
Okay, thank you,
Madam Chair. If I could, Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum, Tillamook County is one of those counties that does not have a transient room tax, and part of the reason that we haven't decided to put that before the voters is because only 30% of the money could be used for other vital county services. So at least our Board of Commissioners has chosen not to put a measure before. If we had the flexibility, more flexibility, as the Chair states, if we had more flexibility and we had the ability to use it for other vital county services, roads, you know, fares as an example, other areas, health care, sheriff deputies, those kind of things, then we probably all would benefit, because maybe the voters would say, it's going to sheriff deputies that I see are very valuable. It's going to fix up the county roads that I drive on every day. And so I may be willing to pass that or vote for that instead of saying, no, only 30% can be used for vital county services.
Senator Telfer.
Thank you. Following up on that, but you do see tourism. Well, let me rephrase this. Since you said tourism was a vital part of your economic development in your community, an increase in tax would obviously support more economic development. Is that correct? So it isn't just for road generating revenue for roads and other county services. It's really it's about economic development.
Madam Chair, Senator Teller, exactly right.
Okay.
Any other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. I think you actually won a prize, so we'll figure it out. Okay.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, there's the prize right over there. Go get one. Thank you. See, we have crack committee staff who anticipates the need for prizes from time to time. We hope to give a lot more in this committee. Okay, now we'll start with our panels in opposition to Senate Bill 440. We will start with Kari Westland, Connie Hunt, and Chris Erickson. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kari Westland, and I have been employed as the CEO of Travel Lane County for more than 12 years. I was appointed to the Oregon Tourism Commission in 2003, and I have the honor of serving as chair of that commission this year. I am a member of the Transportation and Tourism Task Force, which is a statewide task force you might be familiar with, as well as the Tourism and Hospitality Consortium. I'm active in supporting the health of the industry, and I care very much about the contribution of the industry to the health of Oregon overall. The passage of the tourism investment proposal in 2003 was a hallmark achievement for the industry and for Oregon. The hotel sector stepped forward and requested a partnership with the legislature that would implement a sales tax on their businesses alone in order to invest in the future economic health, not just of themselves, but of the entire state. Thousands of small and medium-sized tourism-related businesses, from river guides and recreation to retail arts and entertainment to restaurants. And it has worked very, very well under the careful stewardship of Travel Oregon, the Oregon Tourism Commission, and the watchful eye of the industry overall. We generate $159 in visitor spending for every dollar we invest in marketing the state as a destination. And that includes $6 in state and local tax revenue for each dollar that we spend. We also freed up $3 million a year or $6 million a biennium in lottery funding, reducing pressure on the decisions you have at the state level on how to fund tourism marketing by essentially paying our own way. Working together through this very secure reinvestment model, we have grown the tourism industry, tourism spending in Oregon by 28% over these 5 years, resulting in an $8.3 billion industry that supports 91,100 direct jobs, a wide array, a full continuum of jobs, all kinds of opportunities from entry level to executive and entrepreneurial careers. The protection of these investment funds at both the state and local levels has been a critical contributor to the success of the investment proposal. Our state tourism budget was ranked 46th in the nation in 2003. It now stands closer to 29th in the country. Our local marketing budgets, protected from reallocation at the city and county level, have been reliable for the first time in history and available to provide a critical link in the marketing process, connecting customers with local businesses of all kinds. Hotels and other tourism businesses can make positive contributions to the economy, to job retention and creation, to local and state tax generation, just like any other business can, only if they have customers. As an industry, we work with the legislature to pay our own way in investing in the future and attracting those customers. Our success has benefited the entire state, and our industry is strongly embraced by Oregonians as measured through opinion research. SB 440 would start to unravel the sound investment proposal we forged together in 2003. There is no possible positive outcome for any of us in increasing local sales taxes on hotels for general fund uses. Rather than $6 in state and local taxes coming in for every dollar spent on marketing, government would receive just a dollar, and the industry would receive no direct benefit. It would be stripped of its self-generating marketing investment and receive no benefit at all. Voters do find hotel taxes easy to pass at the local level. They don't pay the taxes. They're not subjected to them. But the resulting price increases on the retail price of our hotels is an important component of the product mix that we take to the marketplace. And those prices, increases in their prices reduce their ability to be successful and our collective ability to be competitive. So increasing hotel taxes at the local level does become a statewide issue at some point. The tourism investment proposal makes 30% of new and incremental hotel taxes available to local policy leaders for general fund expenses. Almost a third of any new and incremental tax increase is available to local policy leaders to help them with the pressures that they face and we all recognize. SB 440 is a disinvestment proposal, and I urge you to remove it from consideration. Thank you very much for the opportunity to provide testimony.
Thank you. Chair Burdick and members of the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, for the record, my name is Connie Hunt. I'm the current chair of Travel Portland, the destination marketing organization for the Portland area. Travel Portland works to strengthen the region's economy by attracting meetings, conventions, and leisure travelers. In 2007, those visitors spent $3.6 billion in the Portland area and $8.3 billion statewide, as Carrie mentioned. This spending generated $320 million in state and local revenue. In my real life, my husband Bob and I own a little business in the Central East Side in Portland called the East Bank Saloon and Restaurant. And when I left Portland this morning, we were remarkably still doing business after 31 years. Now, why should that be important to you, and what does that have to do with SB 440? It should be important to you because for those 31 years, my husband and I have put our body and souls into our business, providing not only a living for ourselves and our family, but for countless others. Our little business contributes to a huge industry, directly employing over 91,000 Oregonians in the state of Oregon. We fear that SB 440 would severely impact this economic driver's growth. Small businesses like ours don't have the resources to market ourselves, particularly now that times are as tough as they are. That's why we belong to DMOs, destination marketing organizations like Travel Portland. We count on them to do what we cannot. Get the word out that Portland and Oregon is a great place to visit for business or pleasure, or an even greater place to invest business dollars. And when our partners at Travel Portland are doing their job, we know it. We see the feet on the street, and that's what drives hospitality. Believe me, I know the impacts our current economic challenges are bringing. They are touching everyone. That's why I'm asking for your help now. I'm asking for your help by asking you to not change something that's been working. 2003, at the height of recession, the legislature and the tourism and hospitality industry came together, creating a strategy that has not only worked, but has exceeded expectations. Visitor spending has increased 28%. Direct employment has increased 6%. Industry earnings have increased 18%, and state and local revenues generated have increased 30%. SB 440 retracts this amazing partnership that was developed in 2003, severing the ties between lodging tax increases and tourism promotion. Do any of us really want to gamble with this great success, one that we built together? Someone recently told me you have to either love this industry or be a little wacky or a little bit of both to stay in it. It's a really tough business in the best of times, and we all know this is not the best of times. It's a time when we have to look at everything we do with a very critical eye, and 31 years of experience has taught me what price increases do to my customers. It means that they're going to start complaining, and they're going to quit coming in. That means less business, less revenue, and that means I start cutting shifts. Right now, our focus must be in getting people working and, even more importantly, keeping them working. I believe both in my capacity as chair of Travel Portland and as a small business owner that SB 440 would be a giant step in the wrong direction. And I urge you to vote against this bill. And thank you very much for letting me speak to you today.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. My name is, my name is Chris Erickson. I'm general manager of the Heathman Hotel and in Portland, Oregon, of course, and also with the Oregon Lodging Association. Thank you again for your time today. I am not envious of the decisions placed before you, that's for sure. However, today we have an opportunity to maintain employment levels in an industry that supports 80 to 90,000 jobs and 91,000, I think, was the latest count. Unfortunately, the news from the Portland hotel industry generally aligns with the economic news around the state. Travel sectors continue to erode across the region, and Portland is no exception. January industry numbers indicate that the number of rooms sold has fallen by 13%, and overall room revenue has dropped by 15% in the Portland market. However, our market could be in worse shape. In the last five-plus years, the Heathman Hotel and the Portland market have been the benefactors of House Bill 2267. The hospitality industry has flourished because of the strategic commitment made by our representatives, and I think some of you voted for it, our representatives back in 2003. Travel Portland and its surrounding destination marketing organizations have grown market share and gained overall market penetration as a direct result of House Bill 2267. The brand of Portland and Oregon has expanded exponentially, adding jobs to the workforce and spreading the word that we are open for business. In the last 60 days, Travel Portland has booked several conferences with a combined economic impact of $4 million to the region. Passing Bill 440 would significantly hamper our relationship with all meeting planners. Senate Bill 440 will open the door for local jurisdictions to add additional taxes on individual overnight accommodations, jeopardizing our market penetration. The bottom line, the passage of Senate Bill 440 will encourage local jurisdictions to raise the individual overnight hotel tax and adversely affect group, leisure, and business travel. Portland and the state of Oregon will quickly move from the top of the destination list. Furthermore, adding an overnight tax to individual overnight accommodations without reinvesting back into this proven economic driver and our future marketing efforts will add people to the unemployment line. And I want to thank you again for your time, and hopefully thank you in advance for withdrawing SB 440.
And my thanks to this panel. I want to make sure that I'm understanding the thrust of your testimony, and that is that it's not so much that you're worried about losing the additional revenue that might come from a local tax, but you're worried about the tax itself. Is that correct? Is it discouragement of business?
That would be correct, Madam Chair and Commissioners, that would be correct.
Well, and for myself, working at the local level, these room taxes, if they are implemented simply as a stopgap for general fund, there's no end in sight. One of the reasons it was so important to us to have this component as part of the tourism investment proposal is precisely because of the testimony you heard from the proponents of the bill. The pressures they face are enormous. They really, given this kind of a tool that voters can pass without having to bear any consequences for, it's impossible for them to not take advantage of those kinds of tools. So there was a compromise in the investment proposal. The 70-30 split, which was a compromise for the industry because we really wanted them locked in to tourism reinvestment. They're a special revenue source, is specifically meant to keep local policy leaders from seeing this as a cash cow and taking a special revenue fund and funding broad-based services with it at the detriment of the tax provider.
Thank you. And the thrust of your comment was that it might make us uncompetitive. Do you have any knowledge of how our room tax, say, in Portland would compare to the room tax in Seattle, for example?
Madam Chair and members of the Commission, funny you asked that. We were just talking about that during lunch. And we do know that if you look at the West Coast, our primary competitors are Seattle and San Francisco. And currently, as it sits, Travel Portland has less room tax or a smaller room tax than those two primary competitors.
And what would the order of magnitude be, just to give us some sense of it?
Right now, we're very appealing to meeting planners, but I don't think the order of magnitude, I'm not sure. Hopefully, we can find that number for you and get it for you.
You could provide that. That would be very useful to
sure.
the committee. And then I'll ask you the same question that I asked the government panel, and that is, could you envision a percentage change that you could live with? Could you envision that as something you might be able to work with?
Madam Chair, we were feeling that 30% was a generous revenue share. We'll leave it to other industry experts who are coming before you who may want to address that question more specifically. But as you know, the 70-30 ratio was a compromise position for the industry. And as a local destination marketer, the alignment of that revenue with reinvestment in not just marketing but facilities, the investment proposal allows local governments to invest room tax proceeds in facilities as well, and fairgrounds and fairs are certainly on the list of things currently being funded by local room tax and probably would meet the statutory test for new and incremental room taxes. So there is a lot of leeway, I think, in that 70-30 because there are many things related to tourism that are funded out of the 70% share, and then local policy leaders have full access
complete access to 30% just to put right into the general fund to do with as they see fit.
Thank you. Questions from the Senator
Thank
Rosenbaum.
You, Madam Chair. And, Connie, it's great to see you again. Welcome to the Senate Revenue Committee. I guess I had a question following along the line of the chair, because I don't stay in hotels in Portland, obviously, since that's where I live, but I'm always amazed when I go to the coast or someplace else in Oregon how low the lodging taxes are here compared to any place else I've gone in the country where I've stayed, you know, in resort communities. And so I guess my question would be, you heard the testimony, obviously, about the challenges that counties and local governments are facing, and certainly things like having roads that are deteriorating and just unacceptable would have to affect people's experience of, you know, our beautiful coast and other facilities. So is there any way in which you could see it actually benefiting tourism to be able to maintain some of the infrastructure so that we don't have these kind of devastating effects on just the infrastructure that people who travel here are going to experience?
Chair Burdick and Senator Rosenbaum, thanks for having me again. And I would just say, of course, you know, as Carrie said, there's already revenue available. And I think most of us in the private sector like to think that we can generate more by just doing better and giving better prices. Like as I mentioned in my testimony, as I raise my prices, I lose customers. That's always the big fear I have. And I think that's the fear that anybody, and I'll let Chris speak to this as a hotelier, I think they must have that same sense of fear. You're only going to get so much revenue, and then it goes in the other direction, and everyone loses, and nobody gets even the 30% for those bumps in the road. I was wondering about this earlier as I was driving down here, that might be a question, and I think certainly the overall amenities and appearances of communities are so important, but I was thinking about, well, what if somebody asked me a question about roads and potholes and stuff like that, and it's a legitimate question. But I'm thinking, you know, I go to Mexico once a year, and there's tons of potholes there. And my experience is not predicated by those potholes. It's predicated in the experience that I come back with is more about the culinary experience, the weather, and the hotel I stay at for the remarkable price that perhaps I can get or not get. So I think we have to be so careful about overstepping our abilities to draw people into those small communities at all, especially in these economic times. Chris, you want to?
Sure. Madam Chair and Senator Rosenbaum, I believe someone following us is going to be speaking about perhaps the coast more so than I can. But currently, the price-sensitive point out there is as low as it's been in a long time. And I compete directly with not necessarily another hotel across the street. I think Portland more on that level competes with cities up and down the West Coast. And right now we are appealing to meeting planners. Meeting planners want to come and are very interested, and Travel Portland has done a great job to put us at the top of their list to choose their next destination. And if we encourage or pass a hotel tax, I think instead of saying we're open for business, that is completely sending the wrong message to those meeting planners.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosenbaum, if I could speak directly to your question. Visitors to Oregon fund fully 20% of the gas tax that's collected in this state, so they certainly do make a direct contribution to the repair and maintenance of roadways throughout the state. And for me personally, not speaking on behalf of the industry necessarily, but I think that there's a certain equity issue in targeting one small business sector to fund such a broad-based issue as our transportation network. To think that one type of business should field a retail tax to fund such a broad issue, I'm concerned about what kind of message that sends, and whether there's equity in saddling the hotel industry specifically with those kinds of issues.
Thank you. Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that kind of leads into the question I have, and I don't know if you're the experts on the answer to this, but the transit room tax, the TRT, generates certain amounts of dollars because people put heads on beds. Mm-hmm. But there's that ripple effect that multiplier of economic development, of retail, restaurants, and other things. Is there a dollar? Are there records or statistics on what other dollars are brought in by that economic development that occurs that then pay personal property taxes, real estate taxes, and all the other things that fund local governments?
Please keep your answers brief.
Sure. Do a quick follow-up to that. Just a story to illustrate kind of from my vantage point. I have a friend who's a recruiter at Intel, and when they are recruiting people to Portland, it's much easier because of the brand that we and how we sell ourselves out there. Those dollars in the last 5 years have helped us recruit highly educated, talented people to our state. And that would be my immediate kind of thought on that.
Thank you for those numbers. Somebody else.
Chair Roderick and Senator Telfer, the $8.3 billion figure is a direct spending figure, but it is spread far beyond the hotel sector to many, many different kinds of businesses throughout the state. So we do have economic research that breaks visitor spending down by sector. We'd be very happy to provide you that information.
If you could provide that, that'd be great. Senator Haas, do you have a question? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next panel, Gary Conkling, Carl Rohde, and Jerry Norquist. The cyclists are after us. Okay, full disclosure, I've been on Cycle Oregon 4 times. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll go first. I'm Gary Conkling here, not representing bikes today, but in support of those, but representing instead the Oregon Wine Growers Association and in opposition to Senate Bill 440. I've submitted a prepared statement. I'll just for purposes of time today emphasize just one point. Oregon's wineries and our vineyard operations have become a significant part of tourism in the state, around the state, including now in eastern Oregon, as well as southern Oregon and the Willamette Valley. We're attracting nearly 1.5 million visits, 600,000 individual visitors to wineries, and we're adding to the overall tourism economy. What's really interesting, though, is that we're just begun to touch the surface. There's research that Travel Oregon has done that I cite in the testimony that only 5% of overnight visits coming to Oregon actually go to a winery. You would think that it would be something that would be more common than that. And in fact, in some of our counterpart communities in California, those rates are as high as 10 to 25%. So the reason why we're here today in support of continuing the program we have of using this source of funding for tourism is that we have a lot of opportunity to develop that will benefit the state largely, will benefit the individual communities, many of which, most of which are rural because we are, in fact, a farm-related activity. And so we would hope that we would not cloud or in any way diminish or divert funds that are now going to tourism for other undoubtedly worthwhile purposes, but use them to good effect in the tourism industry, including for cultural tourism, of which we're part. Thank you.
Thank you. Carl?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. My name, for the record, is Carl Rohde. I'm the Government Relations and Public Affairs Director for the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. We are in opposition to Senate Bill 440 for the reason that is stated in the letter that I have provided you, my written testimony. I'm not going to read that because I do have my eyes on the prize. So it's important to recognize the incredible importance of the tourism industry to bicycling and the support that we have received from organizations like Travel Portland and Travel Oregon in our advocacy efforts to encourage people to come and cycle here in Oregon. And I can tell you firsthand that I have participated in interviews from around the world. I had a reporter from a newspaper in Germany and a reporter from a newspaper in Seoul, South Korea, both calling me to find out what it is about bicycling in Portland because it's part of their interest from their constituents. And interestingly enough, when a bicyclist travels, they usually travel with just their bike, their spandex, and their credit card. And so once they get to their destination, they go and spend money all over the place as they buy food and beverages and lodging. So we appreciate the partnerships that we've developed with the tourism promotion industry, and we would hate to see anything that might jeopardize the funding for those efforts that they have ongoing. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, and the committee for the opportunity to testify today. I would recommend that Senate Bill.
Can you recommend?
Jerry, I'm Jerry Norquist. I'm sorry. I'm the president of Three People Productions. I'm the event manager for CycleArt. Thank you, Chair Burdick, for reminding me of that. Senate Bill 440, I think, is the wrong approach in helping us solve the current economic crisis. And if it's passed, I think it could make the current situation worse. The economic investment, the numbers have been gone over. Kerry Westland gave a very good idea of $1 invested returning $159. That's a pretty incredible return on investment. As event manager for Cycle Oregon, I just want to say we feel that being ambassadors for the sport in the region is very important, but not only does bicycling represent a very important health and transportation role in Oregon, but it also is a large contributor to the tourism revenue generated in the state. Oregon has a reputation for being one of the best bicycling states in the country. Carl and a number of people in this room, we all go back to the National Bicycle Summit every year, and we hear from our peers that Oregon is the place they want to come to bicycle. The Outdoor Industry of America conducted a study through their Outdoor Industry Foundation and found that in the western region, which is Alaska, Hawaii, California, and Oregon, that cycling contributes $15 billion to that western region. In Oregon, the cycling industry contributes over $400 million to the state economy and over $10 million in state revenues from taxes. The employment number directly related to the bicycle industry is about 2,300 people, and in the multiplier effect, it employs over 6,000 people. In my job with Cycle Oregon, I have seen the effect of tourism that tourism has on small communities in Oregon, and we have found that what the state is doing to promote cycling is really working. People visit small communities in Oregon. I live in Sisters, and I can tell you that over and over again, people come back to our community to enjoy the amenities that are there and to cycle. It's very important for those small communities to have those people come back. As Carl said, it's not the young people that are touring with bags on their bikes anymore. It is the people with credit cards. They're staying in hotels, eating in restaurants, and spending money. In the current economic climate, we see bicycling as a strong economic stimulus. When times are bad, people want to do something that makes them feel good about themselves, and they are tired of all the bad news and want to participate in activities that improve their health. Cycle Oregon this year sold out in record time. We sold out in 12 days. We have the largest waiting list we've had in our 22-year history. We have riders from 46 states and 11 foreign countries joining us to enjoy the beauty of Oregon. And much of the success of this can be attributed to the state's tourism effort in promoting bicycling. And I think SB 440 would damage the local tourism funding infrastructure. And I urge you to invest more in tourism because it gives us a sustainable return and it keeps growing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Okay, Dina Scott, Kelly Ross, and Pat McShane.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Deanna Scott, and I come to you today as a member of the Coos Bay North Bend Convention and Visitors Bureau, also as a representative of the Coquel Economic Development Corporation. We manage the Mill Casino Hotel and RV Park, along with Heritage Place, Assisted Living, and Alzheimer's Care Facility, Coquel Cranberries Organic and Conventional Cranberry Farms, and Orca Communications, a provider of broadband and network communication services on behalf of the Coquel Indian Tribe. As one of our region's largest employers, our casino and lodging business employs about 500 local residents. These jobs have benefits, medical, 401k. And as you know, our contribution to this community is very important given its business erosion over the last 25 plus years. I'm here simply to ask you to protect an amazing economic development mechanism that this legislature guaranteed just 6 short years ago. Our local tourism promotion program has grown immensely in the last few years thanks to lodging tax funding. We have a new website, a little plug for business, oregonsadventurecoast.com, that has been very active, but not as active as our director, who's been very busy introducing travel writers to the hidden joys of our local community. Unlike many industries, tourism is heavily dependent on consistent marketing efforts, ones that reach beyond state and nation to guide travelers
could
to
you,
our remote
could you back off from the mic
destinations.
A little bit.
Is
get
that
back
better?
From the mic a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you. A little bit more.
There okay. There we go. The process began in 2003, helped to create a multi-regional marketing infrastructure that is effectively drawing tourists and economic development to Oregon and our small community with a sizable return on investment. For instance, in Coos County, tourism contributes $193 million to our economy, along with $1.3 million in local taxes and $4.3 million in state taxes. Our tribally owned hotel is located on federal trust land and is not required to collect the lodging tax, but we firmly believe in the shared effort and the economic benefits that tourism marketing bring to our community and to our region. Since our hotel opening in 2000, we have collected and provided our local government a payment in lieu of tax, foregoing a possible competitive advantage. This is in order to keep our regional promotion programs operating at the highest level. None of us can say when the economy will turn around, but experience should tell us that tourism will be among the first sectors to return. We know our down economy is creating a tremendous pent-up demand for tourism, and that our destinations that have the strongest marketing programs will reap the benefits when the demand is freed. Fortunately, the work of state and local promotions agencies, joined with marketing efforts of individual businesses like ours, has helped us weather the current storm better than many other parts of the country. So I ask that you oppose Senate Bill 440 in order to keep our existing funding system working for all of us. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony.
Thank you. And please stay back from the microphone because it gives us feedback when you get too close. They're pretty sensitive. Thank you.
Okay, I will do that. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pat McShane. I'm Executive Vice President with Insight Hotel Management Group.
And Mr. McShane, I see that you have prepared testimony here, which we have in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
If you could summarize that, that would be great.
Sure. I'd be happy to. In essence, a couple of points. One is our industry, like many, is going through some very, very tough economic times. We're laying people off, we're reducing hours, we're fighting for survival at this point in time. And I can appreciate the very difficult challenges that you and other legislators have in dealing with the budget situation. Conversely, and at the same time, our industry and our employees are dealing with very, very similar budget challenges. Again, the dollars are obviously different, but everybody is grappling with these economic challenges. I think the point that I'd like to make is that I see tourism as an economic generator. I think it provides revenues for the state, and I think what's under consideration is a hampering of the industry's ability to generate the revenues that it can generate. So I think it's kind of like the killing the goose that is laying the golden egg, and I think it's a short-term fix to a situation that is just going to aggravate the economic challenges in the years to come. So from my perspective, I think it's a great revenue generator. I think there's a lot of third-party objective research that again shows that every dollar that you spend in tourism promotion generates vastly more in revenue spent in the communities, as well as $6 for every $6 in tax for the communities within the state. So I think if you take a look at splitting additional taxes, I think that will be to the detriment of the tourism industry, and I think to the detriment of the state overall in the long run.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kelly Ross, and I'm representing the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce, which is made up of 65 local chambers of commerce, and I'll be as brief as possible. I just wanted to pass along that I've received an outpouring of concern from local chambers around the state about this bill, mainly for two reasons. First, in so many of our local communities, tourism is the economy, especially as our timber industries and fishing industries has declined. Tourism is the only thing bringing new dollars into the community for people to businesses and individuals to make property tax payments and income tax payments. And in many of those communities, the local chamber is basically the economic development arm to protect that tourism industry. They run the visitor center. They're the first face that people see when they come to the community, and most of those centers are made possible through some share of room taxes, and we would hate to see those dollars diverted. I'll just pass along a comment I received today from Leslie Carnes, the manager of the Pendleton Chamber, which receives 14% of the local room tax revenue. She said that, wanted me to let you know that tourism actually grows the pie rather than cutting it slimmer, and wanted you to keep that in mind. So appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Questions from the panel? For the panel? Thank you very much. Okay, now we will, unfortunately neglected on our first panel to include Michael Novak from League of Oregon Cities. So now I will give you a chance, and then we'll open it up to anyone else who wants to speak. Welcome.
Thank you. I'll try and be brief and win an award.
Good, yeah, that's right. Because if you go over, they all have to turn in their chocolates.
Well, I wouldn't want to upset anybody.
Okay.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Novak with the League of Oregon Cities. The league represents all 242 cities across the state. Now, large and small, that's roughly 70% of Oregon's population. And principal to these cities is retaining local control in local decision-making process. To that, I'm here today to express the league's support for Senate Bill 440. Now, Senate Bill 440 seeks to rescind the requirement instituted in 2003 that 70% of any new local lodging tax revenue be utilized strictly for tourism purposes. Now, this requirement has prevented local governments from having the opportunity to judge for themselves the correct actions that bring the greatest benefits to their community. The local governments are in the best position to determine the most suitable actions to make their communities attractive to visitors as a tourist destination. Now, I wanted to point out here, there's been some discussion. I want to point out that this also includes small cities that might not be, that while they're tourist destinations, don't have as many options as some of the larger cities and would not be a destination for conferences. And cities are businesses as well. I mean, they understand that they cannot just indiscriminately raise this tax. You know, they can only do what the market will allow. And that cities have a tradition of forging a good partnership with businesses, actually, and working with their local chambers to sort of to spur tourism and tourism promotion, and cities were already involved with this. And many of our, keep in mind that in these smaller cities, a lot of the elected officials, it's a volunteer, part-time basis. They most of these folks are business persons themselves, and they understand business environment. So the 2003 partial preemption has taken away authority from those who best know local conditions and needs, restricting local communities and cities, large or small, in their ability to effectively meet the challenges of this struggling economy. Now, the current law limits the ability of local governments to address the impacts of tourism on their communities. Communities that are tourist destinations have an additional need for services, such as law enforcement, transportation, parking, and even public restrooms, and need the ability to invest in the right services. Now, cities are forced to look at other options to fund services that can be tracked back to tourism. As an example, it's already been mentioned, more people brought through tourism mean more police are needed. Yet I've been having discussions with some cities that have to go out for property increase tax levies to the people in order to fund more police to serve the increased folks from tourism needs. So local communities are paying, are tasked with footing the bill for this extra service as opposed to the tourists and the visitors. Now, the Task Force on Comprehensive Revenue Restructuring recommends, quote, reducing restrictions on local government's ability to raise revenue, end quote. Senate Bill 440 does just that. So, Chair Burdick, members of the committee, I thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Have you given any thought, which I've asked a couple of the panels, to maybe playing with the percentage of this arrangement rather than just abolishing it altogether?
Well, we like the bill as it stands. The League of Oregon Cities has a standing policy to work to remove any preemptions to local control and local decision-making.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't see another, Anna, do we have another sign-up sheet over there that, okay, at this time I'll give anybody else who wants a chance to come up and speak their piece on this. We will introduce for the record, go ahead, come on.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Terry Bixel. I own and operate two hotels, resort hotels on the Oregon coast and Seaside. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted you to hear from me. I don't have a written testimony, but in Seaside, at least, tourism is our lifeblood. Visitors are anything but a burden to us, and the city gets that. Our visitors provide jobs. Crime happens to be down in Seaside, according to Bob Gross, our chief of police, as reported on Monday at our council meeting. We believe in public-private partnerships that are working very well. 80-plus percent of our existing lodging tax dollars are earmarked for tourism. The city has the ability today to increase the lodging tax if they choose to. They choose not to, and they choose not to for a reason. They want visitors. The other thing that's important to note is that this week we passed in our city, with the unanimous support of our city council, a tourism stimulus package that actually increased our marketing tourism by 20%. And that's because the city gets it. They understand that the $2.7 million generated through the local lodging tax is at risk. Cities have the ability to raise these taxes if they want. If visitors are a burden, raise the tax and visitors will stop coming. They have the ability to do that today. So I think it's a hollow argument to say that the cities don't have the ability to raise taxes or they're impeded somehow. They can. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions for this witness? If you would go sign your name there so they'll have your right spelling. We mess around with spelling a lot on this committee. Okay. We have prepared testimony for the record from Jeff Hampton, who's the president and CEO of the Oregon Lodging Association. And we also have at our desk other prepared testimony from a variety of people, and I would like to say that we will put all this testimony into the record for this hearing. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Okay, Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Piece of information that would be very helpful to me let me back up. I come from a town that is heavy into tourism, that being Bend, Oregon, and from all different types of activities. And I'm very, very much aware of the economic impact it has on the community outside of lodging, and which has been, you can track that because of the TRT that is generated. It would be very interesting to know if any of the organizations or if the state has some data that shows the far-reaching economic stimulus that is created with tourism, which then, in fact, can be equated to increased revenues to cities and counties through property taxes, whether they be personal property taxes on businesses or real property taxes. And so, you know, it's kind of a catch-22 thing. If you don't have tourism, you don't have businesses hiring people, paying taxes, you know, round and around and around. So, and I would also say that for the last 6 years, I've sat as a city councilor looking for ways to keep the TRT in our budget. And so I'm very much aware of what municipalities are trying to do here in just tapping another form of revenue. And frankly, I just find it as another way of government taking money from hardworking businesses that are, in fact, trying to hire people and keep them working. So that data would be very important for me and I think this committee as far as making this decision. So if anybody has that already compiled, I would be happy to know about that.
Well, I think we have somebody who wants to respond to that.
Oh, he brought it with him?
That was fast.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Scott West, and I work for Travel Oregon, the Oregon Tourism Commission. And indeed, those economic realities are available, and we'll make those available too. And I think, as you mentioned before, the $8.3 billion annual base is just spread among many sectors, as was said, both from, interestingly enough, food and beverages, number one, and then we have transportation. And the lodging accommodations, or the accommodations portion of it, as was a lot of the testimony here today, actually is third or fourth down the list, and retail is in there. So there's a number of those things. We'll provide those for you. One of the other comments, I think there was a question around, just wanted to respond to it from the audience, was a question around the competitive rate around the rates themselves. The one interesting thing about Oregon is there's no sales tax. So when you travel out of state, you travel to California or you travel to New York or wherever, you have a sales tax component, and then you have a lodging tax component on top of that. So when you look at those are combined rates. Here in Oregon, essentially the sales tax, you have just a pure lodging tax rate. So in many cases, that's the differential, is that these are, we don't have a sales tax mechanism or a retail sales tax mechanism in Oregon, so it's from a lodging tax perspective in Portland, when you're paying 12.5%, those are pure lodging tax rates.
Right, and I guess part of the struggle here is how it's all a balance. I mean, if we are very, very much more favorable in terms of our room tax rates, and you know, like you say, we don't have a sales tax. You know, is there any room for to increase it some and still be very competitive? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Madam Chair, none at this point. I think it's an interesting question, and certainly one that you'll certainly wrestle with in these difficult economic times. I'll just remind you, as one that was in the thick of things in 2003, you know, the development of that was certainly a compromise, and certainly, and I want to reiterate it both from the historical perspective, from the lodging industry that I represented years ago, to from the tourism perspective. Currently now, that the mechanism that has been put in place has worked enormously well, and the legislature and the governor's office will be very proud of what they've done, because what it has done is exactly what it set out to do, which was to drive economic results, and it has done that in a very significant way, and it stands poised to do it in the future. One other thing about the tourism industry, it is also one that can stimulate the economy in the very short term. It's not long lead. There are certainly long lead things that can happen, but money invested today can provide returns tomorrow. So strategically, it is an industry that is very important in the whole economic mix to be able to be there, to be able to drive traffic at times like these when there are opportunities where strategies may change, but we can actually take resource and put it in the marketplace and get results. And I think that's what this tourism industry is arming itself up to do in these very difficult times.
Well, and I want to commend the folks who have spoken today, you know, the people who have really managed this money and really gotten a great return on investment, but also to point out that nothing in Senate Bill 440 would in any way reduce the stream of revenue that you have now that goes on. And some of the testimony was, I think there seemed to be some fear of that, and none of the current funding would be in jeopardy from that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's correct with regard to the state tax, and certainly with regard to at the local level with the percentages that are set. I think the concern is as you've heard expressed, is that the added pricing concern about if indeed there were additional taxation that came on that went to general services, generally just making the product more expensive, as you heard, and I'm sure everybody here if I have economics 101 somewhere, you know, there certainly is a drag on demand once the when price increases. So it's very concerning, and I think it's really important that was also stated earlier that this leveraging opportunity really takes private sector first, and then you take local destination marketing organizations secondly, and then regional marketing organizational, and then state. All of that arc, that leveraged arc from private sector all the way through, is what's driving the kinds of returns. And when you interrupt that kind of that strategy and that infrastructure that's been built to actually do and return as efficiently as it can here, there certainly will be challenges in the future if that gets interrupted.
Thank you. Any questions for the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mazen, did you? Wait, hold on. Mazen has something to say that you might want to respond to.
Madam Chair, I just want to say something about the tax of this type of tax in the industry. A lot of people like the tax on industry because it's an export tax. It's a tax that somebody else pays. Your community doesn't. But this tax and tourism or export taxes, if you will, they have two types. So they're either taxed just like any other thing, and that depends on the competitiveness. So if you are laying the sun in somewhere here, laying the sun somewhere there is indifference, you don't care. If the taxes and the prices become relative to your decision, then it makes a difference. But if you're going, let's say, to visit the pyramids, or you're going to visit some very, very specific place, the Wall of China, the choice does not be affected by the price. So these are the differences with things that where people think of taxes. Of course, when you go to visit the Wall of China, they could tax you as much as they want because you'll pay it still. Not the same place when you go to either Hawaii or and lay, or what they call sunlust kind of tourism. And that's where I come in with the sin taxes.
Going back to Econ 101, are you talking about inelastic and elastic demand?
Well, in a way, but however, that's why you would have a lot of businesses defending a tax because this plows back into the promotion of the business, if you will, or the industry. So the idea, I think, and the question was how high or how many of these would start affecting the industry itself. And I think we have to identify whether our industry is particular because people come to Oregon because they have special thing in Oregon, or is Oregon substituted by any other destination, and then the price makes a difference.
Okay, we'll sign you that project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member of the committee, happy to.
Wait, before you hold on, Senator Hass has a question.
Thank you. I just want to say that I appreciate both sides of the argument here because I think everybody had kind of a good faith, well-intentioned, and were passionate. But I just wanted to comment that, you know, the tourism tax, the lodging tax, is a tiny, tiny part of our entire tax cut. And the beer tax that filled the halls of this Capitol on Monday is a tiny part. And so is the tobacco tax that fills the halls of this Capitol. And if I could figure out a way to harness that passion and good faith to do a total tax restructuring, then I don't think we'd have these kinds of issues as often as much. And I think a total top-to-bottom kind of restructuring would alleviate many of these kind of concerns that crop up and force us all to kind of nibble along the edges. And I wish somehow we could fill the halls on a restructuring measure as opposed to reducing capital gains, raising the cigarette tax, changing the lodging tax, and on and on and on.
Senator Hass, I would settle for a rewrite of Measure 50. We probably wouldn't even be having this hearing if we could do something like that. So thank you very much for stepping up. Anybody else? Okay. That does it for us. Committee, tomorrow we've got the accountants coming in to tell us everything we need to know about the stimulus plan. We are adjourned.